Okay, are we ready? I would like to introduce tonight's speaker, Cameron from San Diego.
Short. I'm not this tall. I am today. Okay. Hi, I'm Cameron. I'm an alcoholic. It's a privilege and a pleasure to be here. Thank you, John, for asking me to participate in my sobriety and to do my very first 45-minute speaker lead. And thank you to Mike and thank you to Rick for giving me the tour. This facility, I didn't know very much about it, but I do now after talking to John and Rick, and it's, wow, it is a treasure. And sober living was a part of my journey, which you guys will come to hear. And I'm incredibly grateful for it. I had a great experience, relatively speaking. I'm honored to be here tonight. And welcome to all of the newcomers, to everybody who stood up and introduced themselves, and to anybody who didn't. This program saved my life. This program has given me access to a higher self that I wanted desperately, desperately to connect to and couldn't. And the tools of this program have granted me that access to God, to those principles and values that I knew were deep down inside of me somewhere. And I just could not reach them. This program is woven into my DNA, and I hope that you stay. Before I even started drinking, so I my sober date is October 22nd, 2014. I got sober up in Los Angeles, California, and before I even started drinking, I was a liar and a cheat, and I did not have any sense of self. I had no self-esteem. I had no confidence. I was living in dependence of others for validation. And I grew up in San Diego. For all intents and purposes, I had a great childhood. My dad is my absolute hero. He's just an amazing person and somebody that I look up to every day and always have. My mom, for all intents and purposes, was an alcoholic, and I grew up in that environment, and there was no physical abuse, but there was yelling and screaming and demeaning, and that's what I remember from my childhood is, you can tell I'm nervous, sorry guys. But what makes me feel less nervous is knowing that, like, you guys might not know my story yet, but you know my story. Like, we are all here because we depended on alcohol. And I know that I did not come in here on a winning streak, and that was one of the, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, for my very first meeting, I was like, oh, yeah, nobody comes into this program on a winning streak, and I was definitely not on a winning streak. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. So, I internalized a lot of shame and guilt growing up. And it was like, I don't know why. I have a brother and a sister. I have an older sister who recently told me that she took this personality test and just like scored really high on the self-confidence level. And she was like, for some reason, I've just always been really self-confident. And my twin brother, we were born together. We grew up going to the same school, same friends. He is not an alcoholic. He did not internalize all of this stuff. He has always been very disciplined and just like this innate sense of self. And so I don't know why I am this way, but I've learned not to go down that path anymore. It does not benefit me. And now, having been in this program for 11 years, I'm so grateful. My brother, my sister, and I are similar in a lot of ways and different in a lot of ways. We grew up in that same environment with the same parents. And for some reason, it does not matter, I internalized all of that shame and guilt, and I learned to lie, to cheat and manipulate to get what I wanted because I didn't know any other way. And I lied to teachers, I lied to boyfriends, I lied to my family. And you guys all know. I don't remember my first drink, but I do remember I started drinking when I was maybe, 17 and a half. It was like the last half of senior year of high school. And what I remember most is I went to this party and, I blacked out. I am a blackout drinker. I completely blacked out at this party. And the next day, people were all talking about how funny I was and how silly and just like I had apparently been the life of this party. And I don't remember it at all, but I remember that feeling of acceptance and belonging. And that is what I had been looking for the whole time. Every time that I was, manipulating my personality to fit whatever I thought you needed me to be, it was because I really just wanted to belong and I wanted validation and I didn't know any other way to get it. And all of a sudden, after that experience, I was like, oh, I have my solution. And even the first just that in and of itself, knowing that I had a solution, was enough. And when I first got sober, I wrote down all of these quotes that I heard people say in a meeting and in the front of my big book. And one of them, I was just looking at it today, one of them is, alcohol contained the power that got inside of you, so literally transformed you and the way you looked at things. Alcohol has a very definite parallel to a spiritual program. And it was a higher power that transformed me into what I thought I needed to be, into what I thought I wanted to be, into what I thought others wanted me to be. And there we go. There we had it. That was my solution. And I had one and everything was good. And I went off to college and everything was fine. And then it started to not be okay because alcohol just the poison of alcohol just seeps so subtly into your way of life and you don't even know what's happening. When I first started drinking, I was fun and silly and funny, and then I became angry and jealous and rage-filled and violent, even though I was sloppy. I was so sloppy. And I would like I was in college, and so I had like the classic college experience, and I'd go out to bars on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I would just get blackout drunk, and I would yell at my boyfriend at the time, and I would flirt with other men in front of him, and then I'd run away, and then he'd have to come around, and then like the next day, it would be the same conversation over and over and over again. Why did you do this? Why are you acting this way? And it just like that became the routine of my life. And then on days that I wasn't with him, I was drinking or crying or cutting or just sabotaging. And that became, yeah, it snuck up so subtly. And and then I went to college in Boston, and I moved to New York for a year and a half. Things got a little bit better, and then I moved to San Diego, but pretty quickly I moved up to Los Angeles. And what ended up happening was I was working for a fabric sales company, and but at this point, you know, that boyfriend and I had been like on and off, off and off and again, and he had moved to LA, and I had like the last 6 months of my drinking was like I had been drinking every day. So like that was, it got me to a place where I was drinking every day. I was drinking, like my breakfast was wine and whiskey, and I remember bringing the wine into the shower with me because like you get up and that's what you do. And I remember having this thought of like all these wine bottles underneath my bathroom sink and being like, this is like alcoholic behavior. But people just don't understand. I can't have that out in the kitchen because my roommates might use it and it's mine and you know about it. And so I remember I had my drink was Maker's Mark. So I'd bring Maker's Mark into the car with me. And this was not the first time that I was drinking while driving. I am blessed that I didn't have a lot of those consequences where I don't have any DUIs. I never went to jail. That is not what makes me an alcoholic. Those are the consequences of alcoholism. I am an alcoholic because when I pick up a drink, I cannot put it down. I do not want to put it down. When I'm not drinking, I think about it constantly. I am an alcoholic because I have an allergy to alcoholism. So I should have had many DUIs because I drank a lot while driving. So I'd bring the Maker's Mark into the car with me, and I'd kind of keep it in between my feet. And I drove to work. It was like on a Tuesday, and I remember bits and parts of that day. It's wild to me that I can remember bits and parts of October 21st, 2014, like this series of events in this specific period of time. And I remember like being at work, and then I was like, I need to go back down to my car, just get a little swig and I'll be fine. And you know, I just wanted to like maintain a little bit of drunkenness throughout the whole day, because when I was drunk, I was like more assertive. And and I was in sales at the time, and I had to be assertive, and I don't know. And so I went down and took a little sip from my car, and then the next thing I remember is being in the car with my coworker. She was driving me home, and I was crying, and I was wailing, and I was really upset. I don't know why. And my brother, who was living in LA at the time, also came to my apartment and met me there. And he did not leave my side for 48 hours, and I was livid. I was livid. I was so ashamed, and I was totally in a fog, that fog that we all get after a blackout, and I remember that night he had called my therapist and set up this emergency appointment for the next day. And that night, I was getting ready for bed, and I was like, okay, well, I'll see you in the morning. And he was like, nope, I'm staying. And I was like, but I'll just, you can just pick me up in the morning. He was like, nope, you just go to bed, I'm staying. And so, and he did. And I was so mad because I wanted him to leave so that I could leave and go get some alcohol and come back. And he did not do that. So we had this emergency appointment with my therapist. And she gave us this number. She's like, why don't you just go talk to this woman? Just talk to her. And so we called her, and she said, okay, her name was Therese. She's like, why don't you come to my house tomorrow at 4 o'clock, and I'll talk to you guys. So I don't know what my brother and I did that day, but I know the next day we went to a movie, and then we went to get barbecue, and then we went to this house, Miracle Terrace, in the middle of Los Angeles, and this woman started giving us a tour of the house, and I had no idea what was going on. She was like, this is the kitchen downstairs, and this is the kitchen upstairs, and this is where you would stay, and we have double rooms, and we have single rooms, and the single room is more expensive. And I was like, what? My brother and I both were like, what is happening here? And we very quickly realized, like, oh, this, she like explained, like, this, these are the rules. Like, you go to an AA meeting every day, and you are in a IOP of some sort, and you can have a job, but like, and you can have your car, and there's no curfew. And so we quickly realized what was going on, and I, that moment was like, okay, I have two choices. I can go back to work tomorrow and be completely humiliated and probably fired, or I can move into this sober living and do whatever this thing is. And I'd heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't really know too much about it. I remember us having a conversation with my mom when we were really young at a like family therapy appointment where the therapist was talking about AA, and my mom was like, there's no way, absolutely not. And that's the only thing I knew about AA, and I knew there were 12 steps, but yeah, I didn't know anything else. And I moved in. I moved in that night, and I went to my first AA meeting. My roommate from the sober living took me to my first AA meeting, and I stood up and I identified myself as an alcoholic because she told me to. She was like, this is what we do here. And I was like, okay, I'm Cameron and I'm an alcoholic. And at the very end of the meeting, she was like, and then we hold hands and we pray out. And I was like, okay. So, but I look back on that time, and it was like the best of times, and it was the worst of times. And I took 30 days off of work and went to therapy, went to IOP Twin Town every day, 5 days a week. And then I'd come back to sober living and chain smoke and talk about sobriety and AA. And with the other people, it was not a very big sober living, and most of the people there were also doing the thing. So I like look back, and I'm so blessed that that was my experience. Everybody was there trying to get sober and being angry about it and being upset by it and trying to figure out other ways to do it, but engaged with it and feeling all of our feelings. And it was really hard getting, it was hard. My car got repossessed because I hadn't been paying the lease payments. So I walked out one day and my car was gone. So I had to figure that out. And I also had this gigantic pile of mail, which I think is a pretty common thing for us alcoholics. I had this gigantic pile of mail that I hadn't opened up, that I had to go down to my dad's house in San Diego and sit with my dad and my sister and open up all of these pieces of mail that I hadn't looked at, and it was mostly parking tickets, and I had to pay all of that, and that was embarrassing. Like, it was humiliating, and it was embarrassing, and my life got found out. My brother Man, when he was trying to figure out what was going on with me, like before we moved in, I moved into the sober living, he called my bosses, he called my ex-boyfriend, he called some friends. He was like, what does Cam, like, he was figuring out all of my secrets. And I had so many secrets. It was like this web of lies that we build for ourselves. I had not been honest with anybody. I would lie about what I would do that day. I would be on the phone with my dad and be like, I went to the grocery store and I went to CVS. And the truth was I would sit in my apartment and I would drink and I would smoke in my apartment. That's what I would do if I wasn't going to work or I wasn't going out with my boyfriend at the time. And that was my life. So my brother was just discovering all of these things. And I just remember the shame and the guilt and my heart dropping because I had been found out. And now I'm incredibly, I think back on that and I'm incredibly grateful. I mean, the fact that he didn't leave my side for 48 hours, I'm so blessed. So anyway, back to sobriety. I did not want to be here. My first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I loved it. I remember the woman sharing that she had shared that somebody had told her not to share about drugs, and she said, I can't share that my story. I wouldn't be able to share anything if I wasn't able to share about drugs in my life. And I related with that, and she was funny, and the meeting was great, and there was actually coffee and donuts, and I loved my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but I didn't want to be here. Alcohol was my medicine. Alcohol was how I numbed everything, numbed my feelings. I numbed my shame. I numbed my guilt. I numbed my depression. It was the only thing that had ever worked. Nothing else had ever worked. I could not imagine my life without it. So I was so sad. I did not want to be there. I did not want to be getting sober until a woman, the counselor at my IOP, said very nonchalantly that alcohol was my solution. It was not my problem. And that was my first spiritual awakening. It was my 180. And I realized then that I just needed a different solution. And the solution had already been presented to me. It was the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a sponsor right away. She was exactly what I needed. When I first got into Alcoholics Anonymous, she was loving and caring and sweet, and I called her my fairy god sponsor. Her name is Teresa V, and she loved me so much through my first couple years of sobriety and taking me through the steps, and she was so patient, and she spent so much time with me on the phone, and she was not a drill sergeant, and she just guided me and encouraged me and loved me and listened to me, and she was exactly what I needed, and God gifted me with her, and she took me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I'm realizing, she took me through the first 11 steps, and she really encouraged me to start working the steps with other alcoholics, and I was like I can't do that. I don't have anything to offer. It probably took me about 18 months to get through my first 12 steps or my first 11 steps. She said, okay, step 12. Now we carry the message to other alcoholics. Now you go work with another alcoholic. And I was like, I don't have anything to offer. And she was moving to Rome. And so I was like, well, I'm going to get another sponsor and I'm going to work the steps I need to work the steps again. So for the first, eight years of my sobriety, I just jumped from sponsor to sponsor, and I worked the steps multiple times, which I realize now is not how you use the steps. You don't use them as a flogging tool. They are there to help you have a spiritual awakening and to help carry the message, to become clear about who you are, to connect with a higher power, a power greater than yourself, and to be a productive member of society. And then you carry the message to another alcoholic, and you guide another alcoholic through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous the same way that your sponsor has guided you through the, like, and spent time with you. And it took me a long time to realize that. And so it wasn't until I was about 9 years sober that I started sponsoring. After I moved back to San Diego, I kind of jumped around. I was in LA for, you know, I was sober in LA for about 3 years. And then I moved up to Santa Barbara. I was there for 3 years. Then I moved down to San Diego. And I, so it wasn't until I moved down here that I started sponsoring, and it is a game changer. Working the steps with another alcoholic, guiding them through the steps and being there for them and having the privilege to listen to a fourth step is, it's one of the most beautiful experiences that anybody could have. And you work the steps, you get a whole different experience working the steps that way. And one of the most powerful parts of sponsorship that I have found is like just hearing myself tell my sponsees what I need to hear. And it's, yeah, there's a lot of paradoxes in this program that are mind-bending to me and that I love. And one of them is this idea that we have to give it away in order to keep it. And I understand that now after having sponsored and sponsoring. I've kept my sobriety, my physical sobriety, for 11 and a half years. There was a period of time when I got like the 7 year itch, and I was living in Santa Barbara. I was going to meetings, and I was incredibly resentful of the program and resentful of what everybody else was sharing. And I just thought everybody was lying, and this, like, they were just, there's this like toxic positivity, and you can't be that grateful. That's not possible. And I just thought everybody was so inauthentic. And at the time, I was in a position in my life, a job that was just depleting me spiritually. And it was interesting, you know, when I got my first kind of like big girl job when I was year and a half sober, 2 years sober, and it was in human resources, and it was exactly what I needed at the time. I had never been able to stand up for myself, and this whole idea of being able to stand and deliver and be confident, I did not have that ability. And being in human resources and like having the law behind me and policies, I like learned how to stand and deliver. And it was exactly what I needed at the time. And then I started to climb the ladder. It was like my first big girl job, but I also now refer to it as my I need to prove myself kind of job. I needed to prove myself to my family, and I was always comparing myself to my brother and my sister, and I needed to prove myself to this vague kind of person from high school. So to prove that I was worthy, there's a lot that I learned from that experience, and I'm grateful for it. And then it just, for whatever reason, I tried too hard to climb too fast, and it became so spiritually depleting. And I was at that point in my sobriety in my life, and I was feeling really resentful towards the program. And then COVID happened, and I had to be in my apartment by myself. I didn't pick up a drink, but I used a lot of other things to escape, sugar and food and Disney Plus and I made this decision. I just was like, I can't live like this anymore. I am so spiritually bankrupt. And I was underneath my desk crying like every day, because I did end up going back into the office much earlier than everybody else was. And I just decided, okay, I can either be in this position and devastated for the next 40 years, or I can take a leap of faith and just do something that I think might actually bring me joy. So I quit my job and moved back to San Diego and pursued a passion career. And that's what brought me back home. And it's amazing to me. Like, I look back on that time and I was so, like, the idea, what I've learned in reflecting on those things is this idea of, like, what actually is wealth? And when I was in Santa Barbara and I had this good job and my bank account was, you know, growing and growing and growing and growing, and my spiritual bank account was just like depleting, 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 depleting. But I thought what I needed was the material wealth. And it was consuming me. And so I moved back to San Diego and I used the money that I had saved up to invest in myself and invest in this new passion job and career and avocation. And here I am. And my spiritual wealth has gone up and up and up and up and up, and my financial wealth has gone down and down and down and down and down. That's okay. We're starting to make a change. So, and that's, yeah. So I reflect back on it and I think to myself, you know, like, what actually is, that was the experience that I needed. We all need it in some different capacity, some different way. It comes to us in some different way. But for me, it was that. It was quitting that job and moving home. I was taking a look at my like journal from early sobriety, and I read in there that one of my biggest fears was not being able to take care of myself and having to move back in with my dad, which is what I did willingly when I moved back down to San Diego to pursue this new passion career. I was like, "Dad, I'm coming home," and he was like, "Great," and I'm so grateful for that. I was like, in early sobriety, I was so nervous that was going to be a sign of failure. And I don't see it that way. I moved back home. I knew San Diego was always, it was my home. It was my home at heart, and I would make it back here eventually one day. And the longer I was away, and I'm going to get emotional, the longer I was away, I was like, I do not want to wake up one day when I'm 60 and wish that I had spent more time with my dad. That was another reason I moved back home. And I got to spend 4 years living with my dad, and it was great. He's like the best roommate, and I love him. And so there was a little bit of shame at first, but very quickly I realized, you know, we don't have to do anything. Like, the other thing that I've learned in sobriety is so many of these standards that I compare myself to are standards set by other people or society, and I get to choose if I believe in them. I get to choose if they impact me. And that's what the program of AA has given me, is this power of choice to be God-centered or ego-centered. And when I am in comparison mode, when I am comparing myself to other professionals in my career, when I'm comparing myself to my sister, when I'm comparing myself to my brother, when I'm comparing myself to my friends, I am in ego mode. And that doesn't serve me. It doesn't serve others. When I can check in with the values and the principles that this program teaches me and has given me access to, I can be God-centered. And that's our real purpose. In chapter 6, Into Action, I wrote this quote down on page 77. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to the people around us. And working these steps has given me access to my higher power. So when I was, you know, before sobriety, before this design for living, I knew that there was this woman inside of me that had values and principles, and I could see her. Like, I remember this. I could see like this long tunnel, and she was like so far away. And I couldn't reach her, and she just kept getting further and further and further away. But now, having practiced, I think that's the other thing about this program, and having time in this program. Having time in this program gives you more experience practicing, accessing God. And it has, so what that looks like for me is, I heard somebody describe it one time that really resonated with me. It's like this, this internal wall. And when God wants to give you a message, or when you're really accessing your higher self, that's like a little message written on your internal wall. And that, I just didn't have access to that before. Like, my channel to God was so muddied with all of the wreckage and the lies and the cheating that I had accumulated. It was just this gigantic pile of trash in my channel to God. And the, you know, working these steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and clearing the wreckage, cleaning up the wreckage of our past, clearing that out clears the channel to my higher power and gives me access to hear that frequency. And with time, with practice, I can access that much quicker, like on a day-to-day basis. So I don't say things that aren't going to create more wreckage. And I experience this almost every day. It's like I want to react, but I pause. And my sponsor gave me this acronym, and maybe you've heard of it. It's THINK. So THINK. So, you know, is what you're about to say, is it true, which is T? Is it helpful, which is the H? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary, or does it need to be said now? And is it kind? And I can run my words, my reaction, or my response through that filter pretty quickly now. But it takes practice. And that is one of the benefits of just having time in this program. I remember my first sponsor, she explained that to me. She was like, I think I was like crying about something, and she was like, I just have more experience doing this. So yeah, we, and it's kind of one of those other paradoxes that I think about in this program. Like, we need to do the same thing that we, well, I need to do. I need to do the same thing that I did when I first got into this program. Go to meetings, connect with other alcoholics, call my sponsor, work the steps, be of service. I need to do those things in order to maintain my serenity and my spiritual fitness. And I want to do those things today. This, like I said at the beginning, this program is so woven into my DNA. There is no option of not doing that. Well, there's always an option of not doing that, but I don't want to. And so we need to do those things no matter how much time we have. But also, if you haven't grown emotionally, spiritually in this program through your years of being in this program, like, you should be growing. You should be at a different point in your life when you're working this program. And one of the promises of this program, the 9-step promises, right, is you intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. I intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me today. It can be something as simple as when my car battery dies. Before sobriety, I would call my dad crying, and I don't know what to do, and how do I handle this? And I know what to do now. I don't have to, like, freak out or call, you know, you just call AAA and you figure it out and you wait for an hour and it's fine. Like life is fine. But I'm also coming up against situations that baffle me still. But that's because I'm always growing and I'm pushing myself into discomfort zones because I can now, and I have a partner in my higher power that helps me to get through those situations. And I have a program, I have actions, I have tools that I can use to like expand my comfort zone. So I'm always coming up against new situations that baffle me, and that's a privilege. Somebody that I love and respect very much always says pressure is a privilege. And that is absolutely true for me today, even though it's so uncomfortable. It's I get to do this. I get to work these steps. I get to be in this new career. I get to live in San Diego. I get to navigate uncomfortable situations and learn from them. And I can do it imperfectly. I have not done this program perfectly at all. When I was first sober, like 2 weeks into sobriety, I started dating somebody in the sober living. Like, that is a great place to meet quality people. So there's no hard and fast rule in sobriety, and no shade to him. We ended up dating for like 2.5 years, and for all intents and purposes, it was a healthy relationship. But I worked his program and he worked mine, and it was not good. So I tell my sponsees that. I understand that suggestion now of not making big decisions in your first year of sobriety. Don't get into a big romantic relationship in your first year of sobriety. I understand that suggestion now because I had a relatively good experience, but the opposite experience, and I understand why it's suggested. So just today, I overcommitted myself for this week. I just liked, I was like, yes, I can do this, I can do that, and I'll do this, and I'll do that, and I'll take on that. And I had to let one of those commitments go. And that is not what we learn to do in sobriety. We learn to show up for our commitments. And I also know, like, I don't flog myself, that I don't whip myself and beat myself up for decisions that mistakes that I've made. I reflect what is my part in it, and then I make an amends, and I work to not do it in the future, and I change my behavior. So I am perfectly imperfect, and I do this program to the best of my ability. And I wake up every day, very first thing I do is I roll out of bed and I say the third step prayer or the seventh step prayer, usually the third step prayer. And I meditate every morning, and I go to meetings, I have sponsees, I call my sponsor, I am working the steps again, and I do what I can in this program because it has saved my life. And these tools, these steps, were what I was craving. It was what I was craving, and I thought alcohol was that solution. And alcohol led me to Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcohol led me to this program, and I have so many gifts of the program today. Owning my own business. No, I would never have thought that that was a possibility. My relationship with my mom today, I remember I had to set a boundary with her. You know, I was maybe 4 or 5 years sober, and I had to, I don't know, I guess, yeah, we don't have to do anything, but I set a boundary with her, and I didn't have a relationship with her for a couple years. And then when we reunited, I started to ask her more questions about what her life was like growing up. And I had known a little bit about her dad and her situation growing up, but I didn't realize the depth of abuse that she had gone through. And I got curious. I approached with curiosity, and I tried to learn and understand. And I have so much compassion and so much understanding for this. And I get it. Like, I also understand now. Like, I used alcohol to numb. So, of course, I understand where, like, in that component, what she is doing. And I can't change her. And I also read, you know, one of my resentments towards her when I was first sober was like how mean she was to her mom. And I was like, I can choose not to be that way with my mom. And so, you know, I have a really good, it's not perfect, but I have a really good relationship with my mom today. I am in a deeply committed romantic relationship today, and I am loyal, and I am committed, and I am honest, and I am present. And that is for such a gift. Before sobriety, I was lying and cheating. I had a guy in Boston and San Francisco and San Diego, and it was like I was searching so hard for validation, and I don't need that from my romantic relationship today. I have the validation that I get from this program and from God, and I can enjoy and be present in an incredible, incredible relationship, and that is, it's a huge gift of this program. I have friendships today that I never thought would be possible. On my first fourth step, I put this girl from high school. I was like so resentful towards her, and I held on so tightly to that resentment for like a good solid 10 years. And I couldn't let it go. And well, it was longer than 10 years, right? But it took me 10 years into sobriety to actually let it go. Because what happened was through one thing or another, I got reunited with this girl, and I had like my resentment towards her was for basically not including me, right? Like I just felt like she had not included me and had shunned me, so then fast forward, I moved back down to San Diego. She's moving back to San Diego, and one thing leads to another. We reconnect, we go on a hike, and one of the best gifts of this program is the network that we have, right? I come into any new city and I can just get plugged in to friends. And so like I don't worry about that. But when we were on this hike, she was talking about how she just has felt so lonely. And so I pull her in, and now I have a close friendship with this girl that I resented for years. It took up so much space in my head. Not necessary. And I know that now today because I have this relationship with this girl, and it's very cool. And another girlfriend from my sober living, she was on my fourth step because she made people laugh, and I couldn't make people laugh like she did. And she never included me. This whole thing about never being included, that's like a big one for me. You know, again, 9 years into sobriety, I was working with a new sponsor who's still my sponsor today, and he was having me call two alcoholics every day, and I was like, oh, it's annoying, but I'm gonna do it. And so I called her, and now she and I talk every few weeks. She lives up in LA. We got together, and I confide in her, and it's a beautiful friendship. And so I just approach life so differently now, and I think I'm probably about coming to an end. What's really important to me and what has made the biggest impact on me in this journey of sobriety is absolutely the tools that AA has given me, like the fourth step, the calling my sponsor, the meetings, the actual program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and having a relationship with God and surrendering over my will and my power to God through prayer many times a day. The Serenity Prayer is I don't even know how many times a day I say it. It is, I'm just incredibly grateful. And if you're new here, dive into the steps. It will transform you. And be open, be honest, be thorough, be willing to let it transform you. I will close there. Thank you so much for listening to my story, for listening to my share, and thank you again, John and Rick and Mike and Cameron, alcoholic.
Okay, I would like to thank Cameron and hope you come back and visit us soon. Great job, great job. That was your first time? Good, you did good. Real good. Okay, I would also like to thank the residents of the house and Women's Auxiliary for a fantastic dinner. And we will now close in the usual manner with a prayer of the guest speaker's choice.